Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Consequences must also be a part of that system because consequences help people to understand that what they're doing is wrong. Parents have to be more engaged and involved in their lives, and we have to do things differently.
That's Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy today talking about the challenges of prosecuting juvenile crime. This has been a very violent week in the DMV. A 10-year-old girl shot by a stray bullet on Mother's Day while riding in the car with her family. She died 2 days later. A 17-year-old student shot to death in the parking lot of Theodore Roosevelt High School. An 18-year-old shot to death at the Wheaton Metro Station just last night. And it goes on and on and on. Well, tonight, we talk about the problem, as we often do on this program, but we also hope to address solutions to deadly juvenile violence in the DMV. My guests are Mrs. Herring. She is the mother of Darian Herring. He was the 20-year-old who was murdered at the Mall of Prince George's in August of 2022. The trial for the man accused in that murder is coming up in just a few weeks. Also joining us, D.C. community activist Ron Moten. I want to hear what you have to say, what your thoughts are about the deadly juvenile gun violence in the DMV. What are the solutions? Why is this happening? Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mrs. Herring, thank you so much for joining me, and certainly condolences for the loss of your beloved son.
And thank you for having me.
And Ron, good to have you back on the program. Lots to talk about tonight. Ron, can you hear me?
Thanks for having me, sir. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Before I get to Ron, I wanted to ask you, you know, Mrs. Herring.
Yes.
Your son was shot to death at the mall at Prince George's in August of 2022. Briefly tell me from what you understand, what happened?
Okay. So on that day, my son was working with a guy who had disabilities. That's what he did for a living. So on that day, he was with his client at the mall. He took his client to the bathroom, and at that time, while they were in the bathroom, the assailant made a comment and asked him, "What the F are you looking at?" When they were in the bathroom. Following, he made a threat to shoot him. After that occurrence, my son called me and informed me of the aforementioned, that he was in the bathroom, he took his client. He said he was not looking at the guy. He was scrolling through the phone. The guy that he works with is actually blind. So he is waiting on his client to come out of the bathroom when this guy makes this threat. And when he called me, there was a sense of panic. I would say there was a sense of disappointment. And there was a sense of him just feeling broken because when the guy made this threat, there also was a Prince George's County police officer in the bathroom who failed to intervene during this time. So he was crying and he was very upset. And I told him that I would come and get him, but he said that that's okay. On that day, I was in my car. I was on my way to get him. I was going to go and pick him up, but he's like, "No, it's okay, Ma, you're good." But he was upset and he was crying. So I did what any mother would do. I left work and I was going to get him. But he said that I was good, and I went back to work. But when my husband learned of this, because this is something that's uncommon, This is not a guy that he knew. Mm-hmm. This was not related to hood beef. This was not related to a drug transaction. This is a 100 complete and total stranger.
A random encounter.
Yes, a random encounter. And this isn't something that my son deals with every day. Because even when he's talking to me that day, he says, I don't mess with anyone. I don't bother anyone. Like, I don't understand why someone would want to pick with me. So my husband decided that he was going to go and pick him up. So my husband gets there to pick him up after his client boards transportation. And as they're walking through the food court, the guy says something to get through his attention and make good on a threat that he made earlier.
The accused in this crime, Stephen Edward Jones, mm-hmm. He was 33 years old, 13 years older than your son.
Mm-hmm.
The trial is coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'm sure you have thoughts about what justice looks like for you.
Mm-hmm.
But in the context of this conversation, when we look at and this is not a juvenile. Your mm-hmm. son was also he was a young man, but he was still a man. But when you see what's happening across the city, what do you think about what justice should look like for other families that have suffered just like you and your family are suffering at the, you know, with the loss of your son when they've lost someone at the because of gun violence?
So I think justice is subjective. I think it probably looks different to each person. However, I would say for me, I can only speak for myself. And in this case, for me, justice would look like this man getting life in prison. Is that the reality? Probably not. But that's what justice would look like for me.
Mm-hmm. Ron, one of the things that we have heard a lot about just over the past week, we've heard D.C. Police Chief Robert Conte and D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, as well as the U.S. Attorney Matthew Gray testifying before the House Oversight Committee about crime in the District of Columbia. But, you know, even outside the halls of Congress, the realities of deadly juvenile crime are just slapping everyone in the face. What do you believe is going on? We have had more juvenile murders this year than in the past 3 years. What's going on?
Well, there are a lot of factors involved. And it's really sad to me because I was around when the whole criminal justice reform happened in D.C. and throughout the country. And was one of the people who fought against mass incarceration. And it's sad because people come in our communities and they don't listen to the people in the community, the people that help make things happen. And when it was happening, it was a great thing. But in this country, things go too far to the left and they go too far to the right. And I try to tell people, you can't let people out who are not ready. The majority of the people are ready. The majority of people don't need to do time. But people in the community know there are some young people, right, who need assessments done on them and a plan and a strategy to put in place to make sure they don't go out and harm anybody else or they're not harmed. And when you rush people back into society without a plan and an assessment, like somebody in D.C. right now can carjack you this morning, he's going to be out tonight. Right? I know of young people who have killed people. You don't know about it because they don't allow the data to get out. But I don't think young people should get time as an adult would get. But to be out less than 6 months after you murder somebody? So these young people are telling people who mention them that they feel invincible. They feel invincible. And then when they get locked up, we got these people who are supposed to be programming our children and youngers on iPads doing drill music. So it's so many things that are a factor. That's one thing. But then we have to deal with the parents. Like, some parents need help and not getting. Some parents are getting help and not holding themselves and their children accountable. We're not dealing with that. No child should be raised in a household. No child should be raised in a household. Right? And then opportunities. Like, when we came up with all the raggedy buildings that we had in Washington, D.C., there was always programming and something to do for our young people. Right? We took away all the go-go's during the daytime. The all-age go-go's, who took away all the things that young people love. So they now are being raised by rappers and social media and Grand Theft Auto. And we're not giving them positive platforms to engage in so they can still can be cool not to be a fool. Because a lot of the things that young people are doing now is for clout. It ain't even for money. So it's a lot of things, man, but there has to be accountability at the top of the list. It has to be opportunity. And then the pressure that's put on Washingtonians by gentrifiers who coming out to communities and give us their middle fingers and everything else. People feel like pushed out, and sometimes you push people to an edge. I know it happens to me sometimes. I mean, people coming out community treat us like we don't even belong. You got all these pressures on people, right? And nobody's dealing with it.
But let me ask you this, because it seems that and I think you do make a great point that we have beefs on one hand, but then you have clout. You have clout related, you know, killings. But it just seems that this is just happening much more frequently. It seems that there is a message that young people are not getting very, very early in life, which leads them to the kind of horrific gun-related violence that we have seen. I mean, is it the parents? I mean, you mentioned, you know, some of the media things, the music, the videos. Mrs. Herring mentioned that to me even before we came on the air. But what's going on with the parents, Ron, in your opinion?
For one thing, let's be clear. We have devalued the importance of the nuclear family in America. Over 95% or 93% of the 15 to 17-year-olds that are in impoverished neighborhoods are living in single-parent households. This system does not support or push it. And in fact, it actually incentivizes in many cases people to be separate. So you have all these, and then discipline. They told our parents over a decade ago, don't discipline your children. But then you come back and tell the parents, you're not doing your job, so you can't discipline your children, right? So you got that going on. And then you got a lot of people, it's just like if you don't have family, you don't have no community. Because even when a father wasn't there, you used to have a village. You don't have a village, you don't have family, there's no village. And then when there's no village, and there's no accountability, right? And then there's no strategy that really is going to address everything that I'm talking about, then this is what you have. And it's going on not just in D.C. It's going on throughout America. America, where we have policies that are not balanced. The policies are not balanced. We either go too far to the left or too far to the right. We never get in the middle. Where we make, where we disagree sometimes to create diamonds,
yeah,
with a little friction. Positive friction is either go too far one way or too far the other. And that's not working for us in America. It's not working.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tonight we are talking about the problem of deadly youth gun violence in the DMV, but we're also hoping to hear about possible solutions. If you have a comment, if you have a question, I urge you to give us a call. Mind you, if you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise that I will be taking your phone calls. This is a very complex situation, a very complex and difficult issue to talk about, but we are going to talk about it, considering just how terrible things have been, not just this week, but this year. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to go to the phones after this break. But don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. You can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you are on the phone, that includes David calling from Maryland, Paul, ANC commissioner, calling as well. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about the problem of deadly youth violence in the DMV, but we also hope to address some of the possible solutions. My guests are Mrs. Herring. She is the mother of Darian Herring, who was murdered at the mall in Prince George's in August of 2022. Also, D.C. community activist Ron Moten. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. David, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, David. What's on your mind?
Mr. Harrell.
Yeah.
I only have one thing to say.
Sure.
I'm a retired police officer.
Okay.
Okay. And what I have to say is, as far as these juveniles going out here with these guns, killing people, killing other juveniles, I think that parents should be in control of their youngins. Okay? Now, I feel as though if a juvenile goes out and commit a violent crime such as shooting someone, then the parents should also be held responsible. Okay? When you remember when the City Under Siege was on the air?
I do.
And you remember Congress, okay, when I was on the department, okay, Turner was the police of Chidi, was the police of police. Congress had the Turner come to the Congress building and told him that that City Under Siege, okay, would have to be taken off the air because the City Under Siege was the nation's capital.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that didn't hold well with the Congress. You know how much City Under Siege, and the City Under Siege is the nation's capital? That wasn't going to work.
Right.
So yeah. He put together a program that was called I forget the other part of it. But where...
Real quick, David, real quick. I've got a lot of people who want to get in on this conversation.
Well, anyway, bottom line is, I think parents should be held accountable for what their kids go out here and do.
Okay. All right, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. Paul, calling from, where are you calling from, Paul?
I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Thank you for receiving my call.
Sure thing.
Brian, thank you so much for holding this thing. I'm going to say, in my opinion... It's three things that I've seen. One, I don't agree with Ron Moulton talking about go-go. Go-go, food, and everything is not going to solve the problem, and that's been evident. Okay? We have to deal with this issue. How are our youth are getting these guns, obtaining these guns? Second of all, I've said to the Mayor Bowser since 2015, put the plain clothing back out on our streets. They do not respect the uniform. And y'all have seen it on TV and everything. They have fought against the uniform. Conti has disciplined his officers that were in uniform that didn't really do nothing wrong. I even talked to Conti. I called him.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you remember, these people are human as well.
Okay.
And it wasn't like the officer that he suspended had put his hands on him. No, the young gentleman said something smart to him. Well, you gonna shoot me in the leg?
Yeah.
And then the officer said something back.
Okay.
He disciplined him.
Yeah. Dennis, thank you so much for your comment, Mrs. Herring. I did want to ask you: are you more aware of, you know, the kind of deadly violence that ended your son's life now? And if so, how do you feel every time you hear about, you know, a young person or any person for that matter being killed on the street?
So what I can say...
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Mrs. Herring.
Oh, so what I can say is that... I grew up in Washington, D.C., and for that reason, like, hearing about gun violence isn't anything new. However, the frequency and the rate in which things are currently occurring is just 100% out of hand, and things are getting out of control. It's like our young people don't have the proper critical thinking and problem-solving skills to be able to handle a certain level of conflict. It seems like what they know and or what their go-to is not to be able to talk something out. It's not even being able to have a fist fight or something like that some people would resort to in the past as a level of violence. Nowadays, someone have an issue or a problem, it seems like gun violence is almost the number one thing that our youth is going to ask your question again.
Well, how do you feel about it now that you hear about these things? I mean, after the loss of your son,
mm-hmm.
What goes through your mind when you hear about a homicide now?
So there definitely is another like a level of empathy as mm-hmm. well as a different level of sympathy when it comes to knowing the stories or hearing these stories. I feel for other mothers that that may have lost their children. I encountered the aunt of a DC high school student that was a DC high school student that made the news too late last year, but I ran into the aunt of a DC high school student that was shot and killed in a hotel room. Mm-hmm. And while that was not my child, it's like I felt her pain, almost the same way I've felt it for my child, because I know what that loss is like. And she was very disheartened herself as well as for her sister who lost her child.
Yeah, I can only imagine what that was like, you know, for you, that mm-hmm. that difficult bond that no one wants to be a part of. I want our listeners also kind of to share with us how they feel as they move around the DMV with all of the reports of violence. Are you changing how you operate when you go to the stores, when you go out? Do you go out? I'd like to know what you have to say about that. Dennis, calling from Northeast DC. Thanks for calling, Dennis. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm going to make this quick because I don't want to take up too much time. I was with the Metropolitan Police Department 29 years. I retired in 2019. I lost a stepchild, which is not my biological son, Raheem Murray, to gun violence Super Bowl Sunday of 2020. I told Chief Conte, who I know personally, that this was not going to be a good thing and it was going to get worse. He pretty much looked at me, him and Chief Newsham, and what you have now is basically this city is out of control. The Metropolitan Police Department, hands are tied. No one wants to take a chance of losing their job, so they no longer police like they used to. The mayor doesn't care, and I'm going to say it again, Muriel Bowser doesn't care. Muriel Bowser was ready to call the National Guard for immigrants. Why won't you call the National Guard for these children being slaughtered every day? 10-year-old lost her life, the child at Roosevelt. It's not a priority to any of them, and I ask anybody that's listening, is this city in better shape with Chief Conte versus Chief Newsom, or has it gotten worse? In the 1990s, we had the crack epidemic. We solved that problem. Chief Fullwood put people all over the city. We went in the worst neighborhoods and we cleaned it up. You don't have that anymore. A lot of these new police officers don't want to lose their job. They're not proactively policing. I'm going to be honest with you. Legal gun owner, I carry my gun everywhere I go, even Costco to get gas. This city is not what it used to be.
Dennis.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah, go ahead. Dennis, thank you so much. Go right ahead, Ron.
First of all, I want to say Chief Conte is an excellent police chief. Unfortunately, you have a strong progressive left-wing party that tells people that police can't be police. It tells people like that police can't be a high school. Like we don't need, you got people trying to bring guns to schools throughout the country every day, and they say we should have SROs at the school. If I was interrupted, that's not their job to deal with that. So who's going to deal with it? So if you have something where the system is telling people they can't do nothing that's going to go after somebody who got a gun, which you sometimes have to be aggressive, then people are going to sit back and not do their job. But this man has tried to do everything that he can possibly do, right? I know about what he's talking about, Fullwood, the Delta Force. I knew Lieutenant Duffy. I knew him very well. But if you try to do the stuff that they did back then, you'll be in jail. But it has to be balanced. It's a way to do it right. It's a way to police right. But right now, they can't even do their job, because all somebody's going to do is pull out a phone. They're not going to catch the beginning of it. They're going to catch the end of it. And guess what? They're going to lose their job. And that's not all police. We got some bad ones out here. But police can't be police. But they're not the sole solution to our problems either.
Well, you know, Ron, you make an interesting point. But I want to ask you specifically about juveniles, because what we heard this on Capitol Hill, we've heard Chief Conte mention it. It's not new that a lot of the young people who are committing crimes, by the time they are arrested, these are not their first crimes. This is just when they're caught, which means right. that And sometimes they've been arrested before several times. And this may not be popular, but I would venture to say that the population of law-abiding citizens are beginning to take the attitude that we saw way back in the mid-1990s of the three strikes, you're out. They, you know, young people doing adult crimes, and they are saying, lock them up. And I think that becomes a really serious political conversation. It's a serious social conversation. But I've said on this program lots of times with other black activists who talk about, who criticize policing, but when you have teenagers who are leaning on grandma's car and she comes out and say, don't lean on my car, and they cuss them out, and they cuss out grandma, and they show grandma guns, I don't think that the holistic way of dealing with these things continues to be a consideration. That goes out the door.
So the problem is, like I said, we got people, half of them are not even from our city. They move here with these national narratives, and there's no middle ground. I can't tell you how many times I've talked about it. I said it in meetings. People just don't listen. It's a small group of people doing this, and they let them right back out. And it's going to affect everybody, and people are going to lose empathy, and we're going to go right back to mass incarceration. The second thing I'll say, they come up with all this pretty stuff they're doing, right? But then they never say, let's go look at the data and see how many of these young people that y'all kept letting back up got charged as adults. Is it really working? So my thing is about balance. We can fix most of these young people, but if they got the mindset that ain't nothing going to happen to me no matter what I do, it's just like a man in a relationship. If he know he can keep cheating on his wife and there's no consequences, he going to cheat. So we got to have boundaries and rules, and we don't have them, and we let outsiders come into our community with a national narrative that does not make any sense, and most people in black communities do not agree with it, but they're speaking for us.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Fred calling from Forestville. Thanks for calling, Fred. What's on your mind?
I agree with some of the things you say, but I think we got to get back to the generic. You know, the chicken is always the problem. I mean, we gotta prosecute some of these parents, but I know the system is not going to do that, but you cannot throw a child away 13, 14, 15 years old. Who, you know, charging them for as an adult. They don't even know what it is that what life is about, you know, and what's going on. And the problem is.
But Fred, they know what death is about.
Well, how can you know that at 13?
You can know it at 13 because we had, or 14, I should say.
You don't understand. You know, you may never see them again.
No, what I'm talking about is when you have 14 and 15 year olds who are now suspects in an attempted murder on a school bus. That's what they may not know what life is about, but the suspect who is still at large in Prince George's County, who was seen on video wielding that gun that misfired and did not kill the other 14-year-old. They may not know what life is about, but they certainly know what death is about because he knew what that gun could have done.
Well, they know what the gun should have done, but do they understand fully what the consequences are? And that's a question that the court has to ask. You know, they are charging us as adults. Period. You know, at 13 and 14, but we can't drink no liquor. We can't drink wine. We can't go into a club. So that's a double standard right there. But you're charging them for adult as an adult at 13 and 14, but they can't drink in
not in D.C. Not in D.C.
What's that?
Go ahead, Ron.
You understand what I'm saying? They're
not being charged as adults in D.C. Like I said, it was a young person who was just sentenced in Washington, D.C. with multiple bodies. 10 years ago, when he went to go get sentenced, he told the judge, I don't want to hear that, you know what, give me my time. That's the mentality of young people that you got going in the courtroom right now. What I'm saying, we ain't got to give them life, but we got to sit them down and deal with their mentality and get them straight. And sometimes, and most of the time, for somebody who killed somebody, that's not going to happen in 6 months.
Yeah. Fred, thank you so much for your comment. Mrs. Herring, you were nodding your head. Your thoughts about that?
So there are a few things and some things that I heard Ron say that I 100% agree with, is that a part of one thing that we need to see happen is more rehabilitation within the criminal justice system. But another saying that I believe in is you keep doing what you're doing, you keep getting what you got, as well as insanity is doing the same things over and over and over again and getting the same result. So it goes back to Ron's point that there's a need to look at what our criminal justice system is doing, and then a need to reform that in a way that maybe it makes some of these crimes more punishable. Because as people, we're going to either be driven by a reward, or our behavior is going to be driven by a consequence.
Well, but what do you think, as you probably have heard, that the mayor, with her new, you know, anti-crime plan, has proposed that young people that are arrested for these offenses not be held in adult facilities, but she wants the council to approve the proposal that would allow these young people, while they were awaiting trial, to be held longer, not to be let go, as many of them apparently have been, according to the U.S. attorney. Do you think that's a good idea?
I would say that I don't think that is a good idea. From things that I've seen or from cases that I may know about, a lot of the times when juveniles are released to the custody of their parents, there was a lack of parenting to begin with.
So the proposal is that they be essentially locked up, they get arrested, not released to their parents, put in a youth facility, not with adults, until trial. That's the proposal.
Right. So I think that to be detained until trial may be more appropriate, and it may help.
Yeah. No ankle monitoring.
And I think, like, if you look at all these young people who've been killed, a lot of these young people have an ankle bracelet on when they're killed. Something is wrong. And accountability, when we used to do the work with Peace and Hall, we used to go to their school to make sure they were schooled every day. Some elementary schools, children, 27% of the children not coming to school. Some middle schools, sometimes 40% are not coming to school. Where's the accountability? So we had accountability. We had case managers who were like surrogate parents for those people or those children who didn't have a good parent in the household. That's what we need. You got to fill in the gap. And until this system is really understanding how to fill in the gap and hold people accountable, we're going to keep on seeing the same thing. And the other guy said something about no go-go. I wasn't specifically saying go-go. I'm talking about activity for young people to have positive engagement instead of being on these blocks and these corners selling and using drugs. That's the other thing. Y'all throw weed in our community. I told them to educate the young people on the weed. They put the weed in the community. Young people start smoking, even though it's illegal for them, right? They get hooked on it because there's 40% THCs in it. Now they go steal and rob people to get the weed. That's because, once again, the progressives come in our community and push policies and don't let the people who understand our people have any input. No input.
So, real quick before I go back to the phone, Ron, and this is a really, really, really simple question. Do you believe that these young people are just not learning the difference between right and wrong? Or do they not care about the difference between right or wrong? Because once they, you know, obviously when they may carjack somebody, shoot them, if the police show up, obviously they're running away. These people who are doing these flash mob robberies, whether it be in high-end stores downtown or even in 7-Elevens in, you know, out in the county. What this is a moral question. Where is the thing about right or wrong, Ron?
I think that it was one time in our community when if a child had a mother and father in their household, you can almost guarantee that they would be going in a straight path. We live in a time of society because the influence of social media and their music and poor parenting and lack of activities and many other things and accountability, with young people not thinking about the consequences of what they do. And then when they make mistakes, we don't have a way
to get them on a straight path and have accountability without over-punishing them, right? People are scared for us to over-punish them, and I get that. But you can't kill somebody and know that you might only do 2 or 3 months, 6 months. No, if you kill somebody, you're going to sit your butt down and think about it. And in fact, I know I got brothers out here doing great work. Paul the Baptist was a murderer. But you got to repent, and you got to get yourself together, and then you got to come back and do well. But you can't just throw them back out in the street. You setting them up, and you setting our community up. That's what's going on right now. We setting our children up, our babies up, and we setting our community up.
Let me go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Ambrose, calling from D.C. Ambrose, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, and I'm listening intently to this conversation, and, you know, I know, I'm glad Brother Ron Moten is on. He's absolutely right. We sometimes argue two sides of the same coin. There are those that are saying to lock them up, those that are saying we need to have leniency and get them some help, get their families some help. It's not either or, it's both. But what I'm trying to say is very simple. For decades, this city has invested in communities in a way that did not reach the people we are now talking about for decades. It doesn't matter which mayor it was. Mayor Anthony Williams publicly said that he is sorry for the way that he put this city on the development track. He publicly said he was sorry. They have not invested in our communities for decades. And what is happening right now is that D.C. is reaping what it has sown. It has not invested in people. It has not invested in our communities in a way that makes it real, that families have income, that families have ways of success, and they are reaping what they are sowing. The mayor's plan for how she's going to deal with violence is not going to work until they deal with the issues that are underlying in this city, because people are not invested in. This city does not invest in people. We got programs all day long. But programs are not going to solve this problem. We got almost 100,000 black people that are living in poverty. A third of the black population are living in poverty. There is no way that you're going to tell me that more police on the street are going to solve the problem. It might for a minute, but it's not a long-term solution at all.
Yeah.
We do need to have reform. Ron is right. There are some bad people out there that we need to corral. We need to get to them. But we also need the things that we need to build family strength and to be able to provide success for people. And you can't do that in an environment where the city has $19.5 billion in a budget that doesn't invest in community.
Okay. Ambrose, thank you so much for your spirited comment. You make a lot of good points, particularly about poverty, because it's not just the economic poverty, but it is also the poverty of the mind. And that is as big a contributor to the violence that we are seeing in the DMV and around the country regarding young people as we are the economic poverty. Let me go back to the phone line. Let's go to Tish. Tish calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Tish. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I've really heard a lot today. I mean, it's very overwhelming. But my personal experience, I moved in the city in 08 when Obama came to the city. So my experience with living in Maryland and moving in the city, my kids were challenged. My son was, they tried to bully him. He actually had to turn into a boxer to get through people challenging him, okay? He ended up being, you know, like a badass at the end. But at the same time, I feel like kids don't have dreams. They don't have dreams. Like, the parents are working. Like you said, father and mother in the home, then the ones with just the mother in the home. People go to work, they come home. Is this a moment to hug or to talk to your child? I have stopped my son many a time. My son has almost been caught up, okay, like facing serious situations. But I talk to him. I see he's hanging with groups of young men back in high school. He's 24 now. But when he was in high school, they had groups. They are easy to be influenced, okay? They're easy to be influenced. And if you don't get a hold on them, phone call them. Hey, what you doing? Where you at? Yeah, you need to come on in. Let's go to the store together. Sometimes parents are so tired that they don't realize when they see a pattern or behavior out of their child where they're leaning towards these groups of kids, they're easily influenced.
Yeah.
I mean, I've stopped my son from getting in many, many situations just by phone calling him and say, hey, where are you?
Yeah.
Come on and go to the store with me. It's a connection.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is.
I mean, the parents are raising, the kids are really raising themselves. From what I see and my kids' friends, a lot of their kids' parents even have died from drugs or drinking or liver failure. They're out here now in their early 20s raising themselves. The boy who had his funeral shot up knew his mother. Like, I knew these kids that you hear these stories on the news about them. And then you're like, my God, I knew him when he was in elementary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Tish, thank you so much for your comment, which brings me to Mrs. Herring again.
Mm-hmm.
From all accounts, prior to, you know, my meeting you, you raised a fine young man.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that your like my mother used to say, stay on them. And with Darian, I suspect you did.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about that, staying on him as a parent so that he did not get lost before, you know, he was taken from him.
So just going back to the fact that I had him as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And as a teenager, I had to, I mean, even though I was a teen mom, what I was not going to be is a statistic. And as a result, my child was not going to be a statistic. That has always been my narrative, is that statistics are the way they are based on the decisions that people make. So I made sure in my life I made the right decisions, not only for myself, but also for my child. So I refused for him to be a statistic. As a mother, I was an involved parent. If there was a parent-teacher conference, I was there. If there was an issue or problem at school, I was there. If I had an issue or concern regarding the school and the way that the school was going about providing any accommodations that he needed, I was escalating it to the school CEO. I was talking to the school's parents. Also, as a result, I had a good relationship with my child. I had some of those conversations that Tish was talking about, that you talk to your children. You have a relationship with your child. I had a relationship with my son. I talked to him about the type of friends or making the right friends. I made sure that he wasn't hanging out in the streets. At 20 years old, my son has never even been in a fight. So that's the type of child that I raised, the type of child who had a mother that was there, the type of child that had a mother that was involved, and as a result, the type of child who not only had a parent to tell them, but the wherewithal to listen to what he was receiving from his parents and then lived out that level of guidance.
And you have another child, a new one.
I do.
And a child who you and your husband, I'm sure, will do all the right things just as you did with your son, Darian, and to raise her to be a wonderful and beautiful part of our society. And we hope that she stays protected.
Mm-hmm.
And you and your family as well.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. I appreciate your passion, your intellect, and your parenting.
Thank you.
Mrs. Herring, thank you. Ron Moten, thank you also for talking to us. We'll be in touch because we will need to stay in touch. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity. Have a blessed day.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, May 19th. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Malek Green, Bramante Bryan, producer Candace Wilson, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Good night, and have a wonderful weekend.